Today, October 28th, is the anniversary of the foundation of Czechoslovakia in 1918 and a state holiday here in the Czech Republic. So instead of our usual programme, today we have a special show. In the profile on her blog site, Victoria Doherty writes that she comes from the ultimate Cold War family, a description it would be hard to disagree with. Her grandfather was part of an entire Czechoslovak ice hockey team that defected after the communist takeover, while her grandmother made her own escape soon afterwards. In 1967, Doherty's parents also made it across the Iron Curtain illicitly, dramatically crossing Yugoslavia's border with Italy before making a new life in the United States. Just over two decades later, after the fall of communism, the writer found herself moving in the other direction, as one of the thousands of young Westerners in the Wild East Prague of the early 1990s. Unlike most, however, she had a deep personal connection to the city and Czech culture. Earlier this month, Victoria Doherty was back in Prague for a visit that included a reading from her novel The Bone Church. Partly set at a macabre ossuary just outside Kutná Hora, the book also partly draws on her own family's dramatic Cold War stories. The morning after her reading, the author came into Radio Prague studios, where we first discussed the wartime experiences of her grandparents.
They were pretty dramatic. My grandparents had hidden Jews, and maybe hidden isn't exactly right. What they would do is they would be a stop-off point, and so the few people that they helped cross would come stay with them for perhaps a week, and then they would go off to the next point. I think only one time they drove someone across the border, they had them in their trunk, and they were stopped, and my grandmother had to, you know, charm the agent into not looking in the trunk and was offering him sausages and, you know, everything that they had that they were taking with them into Slovakia, where my grandfather trained. My grandfather was a hockey player for the Czech national team. And so, you know, they were very mobile, so they were really ideal for this kind of underground work because he had privileges that other people didn't.
Where do they live?
In Prague, but he would train in Slovakia. So they would go to Bratislava during training times, and so they spent their time going back and forth. But, you know, apart from that, I suppose that their wartime experience was just like everybody else's. It was afterwards when the new communist government really didn't like dissenters of any type, and when they saw that they had, you know, kind of worked against the enemy, even if Germany was a common enemy, they started cracking down on people like that. And my grandparents ended up fleeing in 48 because they had heard from reliable sources that they were about to be arrested. And I think they got like 23 and 28 years in prison in absentia after they left.
Was it the case that your grandfather defected while on a hockey tour?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I believe it was Switzerland. The whole hockey team defected. It was a pretty famous defection, although it was sort of rubbed out of the history books like they tended to do back then. And I think a couple of the hockey players returned and they were put to work in the uranium mines and died of bone cancer, you know, when they were in their 30s.
And your grandmother left separately from him in that case?
She did. She left and crossed the border on foot from Bratislava to Vienna. And she left my mom and her sisters behind. She was going to take them with her. But when she talked to her parents, they said, no, it's going to be too difficult to cross the border with three small children. Because my aunt, who was the youngest, was 6 months old. My mother, who was the oldest, was 6 years. And then she had another sister who was four. And they just didn't believe communism would stick and they could get their children back through international intermediaries or that it would be over soon. And they were wrong.
It must have been a complete horror for your grandparents when they realized that they couldn't get their kids out.
I think it was. I mean, it definitely left, you know, tremendous marks on our family. So, I mean, it's something that we still deal with. Her daughters still have problems with her. I mean, my grandmother has passed away, but it was very difficult. They never quite reconciled after that.
I've known cases of families where one of the parents left, but not where both parents left and left all the kids.
I think that's the point that my mom and her sisters make. They just really can't understand how my grandmother could have left. They understand, in a sort of chauvinistic way, they understand how the man could have left, but they don't understand how their own mother could have left them behind.
And was your grandmother remorseful?
I think she was, but she wouldn't admit it.
What did your grandparents do in the States?
My grandfather, you know, they had several businesses. I mean, when they first got there, they just took anything that they could, like, you know, people did. But my grandmother had an economics degree, and she ended up actually having a pretty high-flying career. She ran 3 5-star French restaurants. She was the business end. And this was in the 1970s and somewhat in the 1980s when, you know, French food was really big. And so, you know, one of the restaurants, people like Mick Jagger would come in, you know. And she had no idea who Mick Jagger was and didn't care, but she would, you know, try to get me an autograph or something like that. I didn't even really know who Mick Jagger was, but it was just kind of fun. Whenever she knew somebody famous would come in, she'd try to get something for us.
Did she trade on the fact that she was a defector? Was that something that she was proud of or that she told people about?
She was very proud of being a defector, but I'm not sure she traded on it. I mean, one of the things they did do, actually, when they were trying pretty desperately to get their children back, is that they would go talk to organizations, various organizations that they thought might help them. And my grandmother would give talks and try to get help. I mean, they at one point, Newton Minow and Adlai Stevenson had a law firm in Chicago, and they were working for her pro bono. And Adlai Stevenson flew to Czechoslovakia to meet with not the president, but someone high in the government, and he was refused. And so, I mean, they had pretty big help, but it just was to no avail. The Czech government really put their boot down, especially since my grandfather had been famous and he'd been part of this hockey team that defected.
So your mother and her sisters were then brought up by their grandmother?
Correct. Their mother's mother.
And how did that go?
You know, it was difficult. I think as a grandparent, you don't expect to be raising your grandchildren. And there was so much stress in the household. And there was so much stress because their lifestyle had changed dramatically when communism came. And
also, I guess the repercussions because their daughter had left the country.
All of that. And so, you know, the family was punished for having the girls on top of it. And that put the girls in a pretty bad situation. So, you know, she was in a tough spot too. But she, you know, was not the best guardian for, especially my mother and her youngest sister. She actually loved my mother's middle sister very much and just didn't show that love to the other two at all.
Your mother married here and then she also left the country in 1967. How did they get out?
Well, they had permission to go to Yugoslavia for vacation. They knew that there was a point where they could cross, I'm not sure, I was going to say pretty easily, easier than in other places. In Yugoslavia, the Yugoslavs were pretty lax in terms of how they dealt with defectors compared to the other communist states, of course, and they had sort of broken off from the main sort of Soviet cluster. And they just sort of had to find a way to somewhat credibly get across, and they were caught twice. I mean, my father was telling the story, and I'd actually never heard his side of the story before, but he was telling it last night at my reading. And, you know, he was saying how he remembers crawling, and suddenly he sees a pair of boots, and he looks up, and there's, you know, a border guard ready to take them in. And, I mean, my brother had nightmares for years because he remembers guns being pointed at him.
How old was he?
He was 8 years old. And, you know, they tried 3 times to get across the border, and twice they were caught and, you know, got in all sorts of trouble. And the third time they were able to get across, they had befriended this Yugoslavian couple, and they had kind of given them everything they have in exchange for their passports. And, you know, my father was saying they were like 30 years older, but nobody really looked too closely at the passports. And so they just let them go through.
And when your parents left, your mom's sisters were interrogated, I understand.
Yes. Yes, I definitely know her middle sister was. They were very close. And so they had assumed that my middle sister had known about the defection, which she had not, because my mother had tried defecting several times before. And she'd made the mistake of telling someone in the family, not her sister, but, you know, somebody else, and they ratted her out. And so she wasn't taking any chances this time. And so they brought my Aunt Vicky in for questioning. And, you know, they brought a large, maybe 2-foot-tall dossier on my mother that they'd been keeping since my mother was 12. And my aunt says that she just remembers that the first line of the dossier was that about my mother was, even though she's only 12, she thinks like an adult, and therefore that makes her even more dangerous.
Also, I guess your mother must have had a process of getting to know her mother for the first time in her, what, late 20s?
Yeah, she was 26, I think.
Do you know how that reunion went?
I think it went awkwardly at first, but my mom was, you know, my mom was the only one of the three who really remembered her mother and really pined for her mother, because she was six when my grandmother left, and my mom says she just remembers sitting at the window waiting for her every day and hoping against hope that she would come that day, and she did that for years. And so she desperately wanted to have a relationship with my grandmother, and of the three, she did. Actually, she cared for my grandmother until the day my grandmother died. They lived together, and I think that they did, I mean, they definitely did have a relationship. It was just very bumpy because my grandmother just didn't want to go there. I think it was too painful for her.
When you were growing up, did you have much awareness of your Czech culture and background?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you couldn't avoid it because, I mean, you know, when my mom first came to the U.S., she was pregnant with me. And so Czech was my first language because she wasn't speaking English very well. And we ate Czech food. And I think that we had a pretty rich Czech cultural experience at home. I mean, I felt definitely at home when I moved here. But I, at the same time, I'd never felt more American.
And could you speak Czech when you moved here? Which was in 1991, was it?
Yeah, about then. Yeah, oh yeah, I spoke fluently because, you know, I was speaking at home. I spoke much better than I do now. I actually spoke very well then. I was translating for the EU. Now my Czech is pitiful because I just never speak.
I guess you must have met many people in a similar situation to you whose parents had left at the end of the 60s and they were moving here themselves in the early 90s of your generation.
Here? Not many. Most of the people that I met here, strangely, had no connection to Czech culture. I felt like I was an anomaly, which I thought was really strange. I mean, there was always a handful of people who were kind of like me and had Czech parents, but it really was just a handful. The vast majority of the expats that I met here just came because they thought it would be an exciting place to be.
Which it was, I remember in those days.
Yeah.
What are your standout memories of that time in Prague?
Oh, most of them are just funny. I remember the way contracts just meant nothing. You know, I worked for a Czech company and I was also a partner in a theater, and we would sign a contract for our theater and we would be set to play on those dates. I mean, we would even have our posters printed and everything, and a better offer would come along and they'd say, oh, sorry. We'd say, but we have a contract, and they'd rip up the contract right in front of us and laugh.
I guess, you know, those were the days of the Wild East.
Those were the days of the Wild East, you know. And so, but then I also have beautiful memories of this man who would sing opera right behind Old Town Square. What is that little náměstí called? I forgot.
Malé náměstí,
right. That little náměstí, that makes sense. And he was probably about 5 feet tall, and he had a Hitler mustache. And he would sing opera. And he would just stand there singing these, you know, beautiful arias. And
was he busking or just doing it for fun?
He was just doing it.
Or for fun, for pleasure?
Yeah. I mean, he didn't have a hat out or anything. I remember the full moon behind the church on Old Town Square. I remember walking to work, which I did every day because it was just too beautiful not to. I remember running for a tram that was just, you know, not very far, less than half a block away, and being so winded by the time I got on the tram because at that point, you know, the coal smoke, the pollution was so bad. You know, it just choked you. And I remember the friendships that I made, which will take me through the rest of my life.
And you met your husband here,
I believe. I did meet my husband here.
What was he doing in Prague?
Visiting. He was close friends with some of my friends who were living here. They were Wall Street Journal reporters. And, you know, he'd known them for years. And he just came for 2 weeks. He treated himself for his 30th birthday to a trip to Prague and then to Auschwitz. He's a quarter Jewish. And so so we met it's at an Irish pub. I don't know if it's still here. It's called Molly Malone's. But it was actually very charming then. It was very candlelit. I don't know what it's like now or if it even exists.
It does exist. It's not called the James Joyce, but it's the same place.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Same Irish, you know, owners, I suppose. So I moved back to the States maybe 10 months later, and we were sort of reunited through these mutual friends, and we just started dating right away.
But just staying in Prague for a second, you were involved with the start of The Globe, the famous English language bookshop cafe.
Only in that I was friends with the owners, and before it opened, you know, I would go and I helped them scrub the floors because, you know, the space was a disaster when they first moved in and they had to get it completely ready. I think it had been a laundromat before, so they had to, you know, completely renovate it and everything. So I just kind of went in and washed things and scrubbed floors. It was fun.
And you were also involved in theatre in those days.
Right, right, right.
What was the Black Box Theatre?
You know, it was an English language theatre. I think originally the concept was to do exclusively sort of Czech plays, or at least plays that somehow related to this country and what was going on. And for the most part, it stuck to that. I mean, we did everything from, you know, a communist propaganda play, which was great fun.
Because it was so simple and stupid, I'm guessing.
Oh, it was awful. And it was the best one. I mean, that's why we picked it. Because, I mean, of all the awful communist propaganda plays that we read, this was by far the best. And it was just excruciating. I mean, if first, the cast was enormous because, of course, the whole point was to employ people. So, you know, it made no sense how the dialogue went, apart from the fact that the dialogue truly was terrible. You know, everyone got a piece of the dialogue. So it was completely unnatural on top of it. You know, it was like, hark, who goes there? But it was great fun, and it was actually a huge hit, and we weren't sure how it was going to go over because for the English language audience, it was just a terrible play. And for the Czechs, we didn't know if they'd be offended or if they would find it interesting, but they found it hilarious. And I think of all of our plays, that was the most attended by Czechs. I mean, we had like 40% of the audience was Czech, which was really extraordinary because mostly we had tourists and expats at our productions, and with a, you know, maybe 10% Czech audience. But, you know, the audience really swelled for this communist propaganda play.
Did your parents visit Prague during your years here?
Yes. My father had always been coming. My parents are divorced. And my mom came finally towards the end of my stay. She had sworn that she was never going to come back, but she ended up coming back several times.
And how was it the first time that she came here?
You know, I think it was good. I think she had a good time, but, you know, she has some pretty bitter feelings about this country and how she was treated. So I just think she has a hard time letting go of that.
I spoke to Victoria Doherty the day after a reading from her novel, The Bone Church, which took place at a more recent incarnation of the Globe bookstore and coffee house. The novel explores the underworld of wartime Prague and the early Cold War period through the fates of her characters, Felix Andiel and Magdalena Ruja. Along the way, it takes in Nazi propaganda chief Joseph Goebbels and other unlikely figures, while a key location is a real-life ossuary created in the late 19th century on the outskirts of the medieval town of Kutná Hora. Doherty says she's drawn on her own family's history in writing The Bone Church. So how much is it actually based on her grandparents' story?
I'd say it's inspired by them. That's probably the most accurate. Because, I mean, I didn't set out to write a novel. I had been writing. I mean, I've been writing all of my life, and I'd done comedy skits. I'd written essays and speeches and stuff, but I'd never done anything that was really long. But I just started writing down my family's stories because I wanted them for posterity. And I was spending a lot of time, especially with my grandmother at the time, and so I had the opportunity to transcribe her stories. I just, in my downtime, suddenly started noodling around with the story about a hockey player, which my grandfather was, but that was where the similarity ends. But also, my grandparents, when they were trying to get their daughters back, were working with an underground network that smuggled Soviet dissidents out of, you know, Soviet countries, that was operating out of Vienna. And the man who was running that network was a Czech Catholic priest. So that's where I sort of fused the two characters of this my protagonist, you know, Felix, who is this hockey player who, you know, ends up having this sort of very dramatic defection and ends up becoming a Catholic priest and running this network. And he ends up having to go back into what was then Czechoslovakia to help smuggle his former lover out, a woman who was having some pretty serious political problems here. And that's kind of where it grew from.
Also, the actress Lida Barova figures in the book.
She does. She, you know, she was Joseph Goebbels' mistress, and my grandparents actually knew her. I mean, they weren't friends with her, but, you know, my grandfather having kind of been famous, they, you know, they had certainly met her, and my grandmother said about her, she said, you know, she never actively did anything to hurt anybody, but she never did anything to help.
Did they know other interesting people before they left?
They knew the Havels, not Václav Havel, but his uncle. They knew his uncle well because he ran Lucerna, a nightclub, which was a place
where they used to... Miloš Havel.
I think so. I can't remember, but you're probably right. They knew him. My grandfather knew Johnny Weissmuller, who played Tarzan.
Tarzan.
But that's all I can really remember, yeah.
Getting back to the Bone Church, what was the appeal of the venue, the Bone Church, in just outside Kutná Hora in Sedlec?
You know, I had no idea that it was going to become part of the story until we visited about 10 years ago when my son was about 18 months old. And it was actually about this time of year. And I really wanted to see the Bone Church. I'd been there once before, and I had these very strong memories of it, but I just wanted to see it. And I took my son. It was really just me and my son and my husband, and I was surprised at how much it affected me and how differently affected me now that I had become a mother. You know, I had felt a very strong connection to my mortality after I'd given birth. I mean, which seems kind of strange, but you really see how you give over your life to somebody else after you have a baby, and that really made an impression on me, and it was brought home when I went into the Bone Church, and we were just looking around.
The bones of like 40,000 people.
Oh, 40,000 people there, and you know, and for anyone who doesn't know what it looks like, I mean, it's a pretty extraordinary sight. It, you know, you have this chandelier that is made entirely of human bone and utilizes every bone in the human body, and it's stunning. And you know, you have the Schwarzenberg coat of arms, you have all sorts of, you know, you have these garlands of bones that's like skull, femur, kneecap, skull, you know, or whatever it is. And it's eerily beautiful. And it, you know, I was saying last night, and you know, I wrote about this on my blog post, but I was just looking around and thinking about all the ways these people died, you know, that they had died of smallpox, they had died of childbirth, they had died of measles, you know, and a broken heart, or, you know, all the ways that people took plague, you know, all the ways that people tended to die. And it just felt tremendously noble to me, and it felt very spiritual to me. It felt, I really felt like I was in the presence of God and a great sort of circle of life standing there. And that experience started making its way into the book, and that became the anchor of the book, because I really had no intention of it being part of it until that visit.
On this visit, you're here with your son and your dad, and your dad is selling the family farm, is that right?
Yeah, my dad actually lives here half the year, so he was already here, and I decided that I wanted to take my son and just him and me, and I, you know, I want to take each of my kids separately here alone so that they can kind of have a more intimate experience of it. And my father just sprang this on us. I mean, this is a farm that's been in our family for generations. I don't know, maybe 200-300 years, something like that. I think since about the time of the American Revolution, maybe even before that. And when it was restituted back to our family, there was just this sort of intention that we were never going to give this up. But of course, 40 years, it was not ours, and we lost that institutional knowledge, and we became scattered all over the globe, and it became just sort of impossible for them to keep it up. So yeah, he just sort of sprang it on me that he's selling it.
And it's going to be a brewery.
It's going to be a brewery, which is appropriate, right? And I was saying last night, I really hope they name it after our family, the beer. I doubt they will, but it would be nice to be able to drink Cheka beer.
Well, let's hope that they do produce Cheka beer sometime. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Enjoy the rest of your stay.
Thank you so much.
Victoria Doherty. You can find a link to her blog, where she explores her family's story and much more, on Radio Prague's website. For now, though, that's all from me, Ian Willoughby, and the rest of the team here in Prague. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.